What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. This week on the show is Bobby Marks, the front office insider with the Vertical, the former assistant GM with the Brooklyn Nets. We cover a lot of ground with Bobby, from the surge of San Antonio out west to the Jazz emerging as a contender to the Knicks once again making questionable decisions. Quick housekeeping note, please hit iTunes when you can. Give us a rating, post a comment. It's easy and it's the best way you can support this podcast moving forward. That's it. That's all I ask. All right, let's go. Well, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Vertical Podcast. Glad you could join us. Joining me, as he often does, is Bobby Marks, the front office insider over at the Vertical, former assistant GM with the Brooklyn Nets. And Bobby, I guess we should start with kind of groundbreaking news. We have a new first place team in the Western Conference. Last 2 years, the Warriors have basically had a stranglehold on that top seed. If the season ended today, by virtue of a tiebreaker, San Antonio would be the number one seed in the Western Conference. I know there's been injuries, but how significant is this to you that the Spurs have overtaken Golden State for that top seed?
Well, you know how Memphis has played at seven. I don't think it's as significant as maybe it was a month ago, Chris. And you know, it's you got to basically pick your poison here as far as where your path is going to go. And I still think Golden State will be the number one seed when the dust settles here at the end of April here. But you know, what San Antonio has been able to do and do it consistently, we can throw out the game that was on Saturday, but where they are right now, and now you're probably looking at a Denver, or for both teams, a Denver or Memphis first round series.
Yeah, I mean, I still would want to do what I could to avoid Memphis. I mean, the physical toll that gets extracted by the Grizzlies in a series like that, I just think it's more significant than, say, Denver or maybe it's Portland, whoever winds up in that eight seed. You might beat the Grizzlies in four or five games, but having to go up against Randolph and Gasol and that front line and the way that team has played, I just wouldn't want it. I mean, is there anything to that, you know, trying to avoid just the physicality of that type of matchup?
No, there's a lot. And, you know, with a team like Denver, a team that hasn't been in the playoffs in, you know, four or five years here, and you've got a lot of young players there, you know, players like, you know, Gallinari, Chandler have played in the playoffs before, but it's a different stage for those type of players if you're looking at the Jamal Murrays or the Nikola Jokic and Emmanuel Mudiay. You know, Jameer Nelson's got battle, you know, has been in playoff games before. So and as you know, when you get into the playoffs, every game is a little bit of a mini series, and you adjust. And when Memphis, although they've struggled, you know, I know they won last night against Milwaukee. You know, you've got Gasol, you've got Zach Randolph, Vince Carter, who has certainly been in a lot of big games here. Parsons is likely going to be out. Mike Conley's been in a lot of big games. You do have a first year coach in Dave Fizdale. But that is a team that has played together before in the playoffs and has played well.
Yeah, they're always tough to knock out, and even if you do it, you wind up a little bit banged up and worse for wear because of it. San Antonio, though, I mean, this has really been just a remarkable year for them. I mean, Tim Duncan retires. I think there was an expectation that, you know, even with the addition of Pau Gasol, that they would take something of a step back. Duncan, you know, isn't what he used to be, or wasn't what he used to be with that team last year, but he was still an inspirational leader. He was still a defensive anchor with that team, but, you know, they haven't missed a beat at all. Is this just another kind of testament to, you know, Greg Popovich's sort of next man up strategy? I mean, it's not even Gasol. It's Dwayne Dedmon right now, who anybody could have had at a certain point, stepping into that Duncan role and being a defensive anchor.
Well, that's right, and I think it's an indication of what the job that RC Buford and their group did in the offseason. When you look at Dwayne Dedmon signed for the room mid level $2.8 million, you have you know, David Lee signed for the minimum. You drafted a point guard in Deontay Murray, who you know, has had some good moments, and is kind of you know, his third backup right now. But it looks like he's got a chance there. You know, Gasol is coming off the bench right now. I mean, it's a solid pickup for you know, for 2 years. You know, Davis Bertans, second rounder. You know, another player there. Their depth has certainly improved. And then you factor in, you know, a player like Kawhi Leonard, who's having, you know, an MVP like season.
You know what? I like Gasol with that second unit. I mean, they started him for much of the season, but when he got hurt and came back, that's when he kind of assumed that second unit role. And I think that's best for them. I mean, they get enough offense from their starters with Aldridge when he's healthy, Kawhi Leonard, even the backcourt. They get enough offense there. Having Gasol with that second unit going up against second tier centers and being kind of the focal point of that second unit, I think it's great. I mean, he can always play in the fourth quarter. You play the, you know, the best rotation you got in the fourth quarter, but having him available into the first, into the second, to be that offensive hub, I think that helps them a lot.
Well, and then when you have Tony Parker, you know, when he gets back, you put Patty Mills, who's played well, you know, from a starting standpoint, you put him at, you know, with that second unit. We don't know the LaMarcus Aldridge timetable. So if Aldridge is able to return by the time of the playoffs, then you shift David Lee, and that bench certainly becomes becomes a lot stronger. And I think that's where their strength is that, you know, you can almost go 10 deep with that team.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's once again a legitimate contender in the West. And look, they are what they are in large part to Kawhi Leonard. And I know you had, you know, have Harden ahead of him in your mythical boat there. I'll tell you what, Bobby, you know, 3 weeks ago, I went all in on Kawhi Leonard. I mean, when this team was just still hanging there, solidly positioned as number two in the Western Conference, with the transition that they've had, you know, going away from Duncan and the development of Kawhi Leonard, who had 30 points again last night, coming off a head injury, comes back and has 30 points. He's my MVP. I mean, defensively, we know what he does, but offensively, the steps he's taken this year, to me, he's the best. The best player this year in basketball.
Flies under the radar every year, you know, Chris. I mean, he's only 25.
It's amazing.
Gracious, on a great contract, you know, one of those contracts signed before this new TV money, you know, kicked in. And I'm going to stick my neck out here, Chris, and I'm going to say that Kawhi Leonard in a couple years is going to be the first player to sign this new designated player veteran extension. It won't be Paul George this summer or Jimmy Butler or, you know, Gordon Hayward or Blake Griffin or any of these players, but I'm gonna say it's gonna be Kawhi Leonard in a couple of years, and he's a special player. He's humble. He has, you know, came into the league, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, and you know the knock on him was that he was offensively limited. That was a scouting report, you know, coming out of San Diego State, and that, you know, under the right player development program can develop into a, you know, a decent offensive player. You know, the defense was always going to be there, but yeah, you know, you saw him as a nice player that was going to start, and now where he is now, I mean, he's all NBA. He's, you know, potential to be MVP. He'll be a consistent all-star in the future years here.
Yeah, and I remember, and you were probably scouting him at that time, but I remember he was kind of a foreman at San Diego State. I mean, he was, you know, put in kind of a rebounding post player sort of role. I don't think I don't think everybody was all convinced that he would successfully kind of transition into an elite three defender. And he's done that. He did that from day one. But to me, the greatest testament to Kawhi Leonard is his willingness to be coached and evolve. I mean, I remember going down there and talking to Chip England, and, you know, Chip, as soon as he got a hold of Kawhi Leonard, he said to him, like, look, we need to change your jump shot and we need to make it, we need to kind of recraft it. And for a player, as you know, Bobby, for a player making changes on their jump shot, especially when they've had a ton of success, that doesn't always fly. I mean, these guys, they come in thinking that I'm an NBA player. I got here for a reason. I don't need to change. But Kawhi Leonard accepted that, and you could see the changes almost instantaneously. I mean, his first development was becoming a very good corner three-point shooter, and you know now he's evolved into an elite shooter from everywhere on the floor. So I give him a lot of credit for, you know, understanding these are great coaches in San Antonio. They know what they're doing. I'm going to buy into it, and we're going to see the results.
Chris, it's one thing to get drafted. It's another thing to you know, figure it out and to buy into what your coaches or your player development staff is willing to do and to take your, you know, your game to another level. Because, you know, you look at the kids maybe even this year who were drafted, you know, come this June, there's going to be another 60 players coming in looking for jobs. And and the window for your career, you have the choice how long you want to prolong your career. Do you want to be a guy who's just on a rookie contract and then maybe goes to Europe and floats around the D League, or do you want to have an impact here? And I think that's where you've seen with Kawhi Leonard, he's been able to take on that challenge and to basically recreate his shot. You know, we see it in Charlotte with Kid Gilchrist. That's been a work in progress forever, down there. But, you know, but for where he was picked, I mean, he was the 15th pick in the draft, Chris. I mean, there was 14 teams that bypassed him. And I think that's where you go back to the draft. You know, if you're able to do your work, not just now in the NCAA tournament, I know that we'll hear the hot names, but, you know, when these kids were in high school or at the McDonald's game or at the Nike Hoop Summit and to follow these players for the last, you know, 3 or 4 years, you'll be able to find a player, as long as you kind of, cross the T's here.
Yeah. Yeah. No question. And San Antonio, they've got themselves their next franchise player for the next 10 years. And who would bet against them that they won't find the next guy, you know, in the draft in the coming years as well? It's just what they do down there. All right, let's move on from the Spurs here a little bit. And I want to look at a team you mentioned, or a player you mentioned, Jimmy Butler in Chicago. The Bulls right now are not just losing Bobby, but they're getting their ass kicked on a regular basis. Just that nationally televised pasting they took in Boston on Sunday. I mean, Fred Hoiberg has a mandate from on high to extend his rotation, play younger players, see what the Bulls have here. They're trying to figure out if they have anything in Cameron Payne. And the end result has been, you know, unhappiness, dissension in that locker room. What's the fallout here, Bobby? I mean, let's assume, and I think we could safely do this now, the Bulls don't make the playoffs. What's the fallout here? I mean, you know, Gar Forman, John Paxson, they seem to be safe. We know Bulls management is not keen on paying coaches to go away. They didn't like doing it with Thibodeau. And Fred Hoiberg has 3 years left on his contract. Does this ball boil down to a major roster overhaul this summer for Chicago?
Well, I would think it would have to be. And, you know my feelings. If Fred Hoiberg were to go, I mean, I think you've got to basically, reconstruct that front office there as far as who your decision maker is. Because now we've got, you're looking for a third coach in the last, 7 years here. And Chris, I don't understand, we're in mid-March right now and we're still trying to figure out what this team is. Like, you get your head handed to you Sunday afternoon against Boston. You don't play in Nikola Mirotic. You DMP him. Then last night in Charlotte, you play him. He's got 20, 24, 25 points. You play, Rondo 36 minutes. I mean, Jimmy Butler, 38. Last night you played to win. The night before you didn't. I don't know what your goal is. Is your goal to make the playoffs? Is your goal to experiment with some of the young kids? Which if it was me, that's the direction I would want to go in, is to figure out what do I have with Cameron Payne. I mean, you gave up McDermott and Taj Gibson in the second round pick for those guys. Or at least send the kid to the D League and have him play for your team in the Windy City Bulls there. Instead of having him play 11 minutes last night and shoot 0-for-6, I mean, you've got to build the kid's confidence up. So I don't know what this team is, but it's funny though. But if they made the playoffs, could they be dangerous as a 7 seed?
No.
8 seed? I mean, you still got no. Wade and I mean, it's like almost like fool's gold. It's like fool's gold here with this group here. And my question will be, what Dwayne Wade will do? He's got that big option, and he won't make that up on the market. I don't think so. $21 million, but would he want to stay and go through a rebuild, or is it even a rebuild? I mean, or is it a quick fix retool like we saw last summer?
Well, I mean, first, I if I'm like Cleveland, Boston, Washington, I would want to see Chicago because they can't shoot, and if you can't shoot, you're not going to, I don't care how great your aging stars are or Jimmy Butler is, you're not going to succeed. I mean, I'm not a believer in the whole Bulls lightning in a bottle thing and it'll all kind of come together. They don't have consistent shooting. Mirotic has not been consistent. They traded away Doug McDermott. I don't think they're dangerous at all if they get into the playoffs. As far as long-term though, I mean, to me, you're right about Wade. He's kind of got a big decision to make as far as his financial future goes, but Rondo's going to be gone. Now you have to kind of make a call here on Jimmy Butler, because every year that passes, really every month that passes, he becomes less valuable. You're going to get less for him on the trade market. His value was probably at its peak in February when, he's got 2.5 years full years remaining on that contract, and the value will still be pretty high this summer. But I wonder, Bobby, are they going to regret not taking whatever the last offer was from the Celtics on Butler? Because, you know, now if Boston gets that number one pick, now Boston's in a position where they know Chicago's got to do something. And if I'm the Celtics, I'm not only saying, we'll trade you number one, which is going to be Fultz, which everyone seems to believe is a lockdown kind of franchise type player. I'm going to ask for Chicago's pick too. If they're in the lottery, I want Chicago's draft pick. I want Jimmy Butler and that pick because, you know, the value of Fultz, at least if everything I'm told is to be believed, is really high. So I think Chicago may live to regret not taking whatever that last offer was from Boston.
What I've learned is that the value of draft picks start to gain in momentum here. Now we've got the NCAA tournament. You know, Fultz isn't playing. They lost in the Pac-12 there, but you'll have draft workouts. You'll have pre-draft camp. You'll have a number next to that draft pick. So instead of that, you know, the Brooklyn pick, now it's going to be the number one overall pick or the number two overall pick. So that there's some movement there. And, you know, the one thing that if I was a Bulls fan, I would be concerned about is that a year from now, we're talking about the same situation here. And you've got Jimmy Butler, and this is a team that's fighting to get into eight, and you've got issues with your roster. Rondo won't be here, but based on what direction you're going to go in. And the benefit with Butler, though, is unlike George, though, as I've said, is that the contract goes out a little bit longer. So it won't be an expiring contract if that's what you're looking to do. And I think you've got to decide, is it a full-fledged rebuild, tear it down, let's build through the draft with some of our kids? But my concern, though, is that you haven't drafted great. I mean, yeah. You look at Bobby Portis Jr., you look at Denzel Valentine, who played, pretty decent, last night. You look at, you made the Jerian Grant trade. You got, Robin Lopez in the trade. Laverne is a free agent. So, Zipser has played pretty decently there. So you haven't, it wasn't like you've hit on any of these, the draft picks. The one guy you actually did draft, you traded, was McDermott here. So how confident are you that this management group can rebuild if it's going to go through the draft?
Yeah, I agree with you. I just think something's got to give because you're right. The longer you keep Butler, you're more likely next year to kind of be stuck in that same status quo unless you're able to go out and get a major free agent. And I don't see that guy kind of either A, available, and B, wanting to go to sign up and play for Chicago right now. And at some point, Bobby, you've got Fred Hoiberg here, and you know how Fred Hoiberg likes to coach. Don't you have to go out and start to recruit players and the type of players that can play that style? I mean, Fred wants to play up and down. Over the last 2 years, seemingly all they've surrounded him with are guys that are better suited to play in the half court. I mean, at some point, if you are going to commit to Hoiberg being your coach, don't you have to go out and build a team around his strengths as a coach?
And you missed the opportunity this past summer, Chris. When he got the job 2 years ago, he inherited that roster. When you look at Derrick Rose and Noah and, it was basically a holdover from what Tom Thibodeau had the previous year. And here was your golden opportunity to basically wipe it clean, put players around that fit his style. And you didn't do it. You went out and got Rondo. You got Wade. You did the Lopez trade, which I was a fan of. And I still think, Robin, at that salary is good value here, but that's the direction you went, where you were afraid to tear it down and put the pieces around the coach. So obviously the coach was not a priority this summer when you put the roster together. It was more about trying to get into the 7 or 8 seed. Come on, we're fooling ourselves. We thought this team was a championship level team, this summer. You know, that's the stigma when front offices fall in love with on the back of your jersey, and as far as how many all-star appearances you had. I mean, you sometimes when you live in the past, you get burned, by the future here, and that's what happened in Chicago.
Yeah, I think they wanted to get into the playoffs and, use that as kind of a springboard to show free agents that they were a place to go. I think they were expecting harmony on that roster. They're expecting Rondo to play better. None of that has worked out. Now they're in a really difficult position in Chicago. All right, I want to move on to a game that you tweeted about last night as being interested in watching, and I was watching as well. That was the Jazz and the Clippers. And the Jazz pick up You know, one of the biggest wins in recent franchise memory, they're at home, they're playing the Clippers. I think they lost 9 straight games at home to the Clippers. But the Clippers right now, they're battling for that 4 slot in the Western Conference. The Jazz go out, and they get a win. And Gordon Hayward plays one of his best games of the season. They get a bunch of guys in double figures. You watched that game, Bobby. What kind of statement did the Jazz make in that matchup?
You know, it was interesting, Chris. And the statement that was made, and I got concerned when I'm watching the game down the stretch, and I'm thinking, do they have the players to close out? You know, because it was a playoff level game. Do you have the players to close out a game? You know, with the lineup you had out there, and you had Rodney Hood hit a big shot, Joe Johnson hit a big shot, and I was intrigued by the lineup that Utah had out there. You had Johnson at the 4, and Gobert at the 5. You know, you're kind of not that non-traditional lineup with Joe there, but there is a lot of, and I guess it's every team that the Clippers play. There's a lot of, we got a little bit chippy there with Gobert. He looks like he's like a lightning rod. But I think that was a big statement win as far as for that Utah team to kind of hold on to that 4 seed to get home court. I think home court will be huge. If they get it, because going on the road to Los Angeles, I would be concerned as far as them winning that series, but I could see that Utah team, if they do hold on the 4, you know, beating this Clipper team in, 6 games maybe.
Yeah, really a confidence building win for a Jazz team that I think has been brought along really well over the years. I mean, they started this rebuild a few years back. Dennis Lindsay, started to, draft guys and sign guys and trade for guys. And it's been slow. I mean, last year they just missed out on the playoff spot, but they used that kind of as a springboard to where they are right now in sort of a textbook move to the middle of the Western Conference standings. And I think they're more than just a threat to win that first round series. I think if they have home court, they will win that first round series. My question for you, though, Bobby, is that as you look at the talent on that Jazz roster, even if you think Gordon Hayward is kind of an A-minus level player, do they have enough talent for this group to develop into a true championship contender? Look, nobody's on Golden State's level right now, but in the coming years, as they keep this team together and they all start to kind of grow into their mid to late 20s, do they have enough talent there to develop as is, or do they need to add something else?
Well, they do, but the question will be when you talk about financials, if the financials come into it down the road here, how this team is going to be constructed, and that's going to be an ownership decision as far as how much are you willing to pay to retain this group here, and with Hayward's free agency and George Hill's free agency and the Hood extension, Joe Ingles is a restricted free agent this summer here, but. I mean, I'm intrigued by this group here because I think they do have the staying power if this team is retained, to do some things here. You know, it's a great experience, and I thought last year kind of hurt them a little bit, not getting into the playoffs, missing out towards the end of the year, and now you're not seeing them falter down a stretch here because now you've got the George Hill factor, and he's got to stay healthy, Chris. I mean, if he misses games, in the playoffs, or if that toe injury kind of comes back, that's really gonna hurt them. But with Hayward, what you've seen lately, down the stretches, and it will be interesting with him. Chris, he's got a player option. If he earns all NBA this year, which he certainly has a chance, I would think, he can be eligible for the designated player veteran extension if he opts into his contract. And Utah doesn't have to give him that 35%, but he would be eligible. So that will be interesting as far as what he does with that. But what Dennis has been able to do, it's not a short-term fix. He's built through the draft. He's added some key free agents. When you look at Ingles, when you look at Joe Johnson, you did the Diaw trade, the Gobert extension. I mean, this team is certainly well positioned in the future, a lot different than what that team that they could play in the playoffs, that Clipper team is. And I think that's a kind of a ticking time bomb right now.
What do you anticipate a guy like Hayward doing this summer? Do you think he opts out and just tries to get as much money as he can right now? Or does he take that risk and opt in looking for that designated player extension?
Well, all NBA honors will probably come out in mid-May here, and his opt-out isn't until the end of June. So he'll have some time to figure out. So even if, Chris, even if he earned all NBA, I would still opt out and get some longevity and some, you know, some financial security, then play on a 1 year, you know, $18 million contract and God forbid risk some injury here with a knee or something like that. So I can certainly see him, you know, his agent, Mark Bartlestein, is more of the, you know, the conservative. He'll work with the team as far as to get the right deal here. So, you know, opting out is the best thing to do. And then looking for, you know, a 4 year, you know, $110, $120 million contract here. Does Utah go the full length for a full max? That will be an interesting question, knowing that you've got to pay, you know, George Hill, and then you eventually got to pay, you know, the two other free agents as far as, you know, with Ingles and then, you know, Hood the following year.
Yeah, you'd hate to see finances break up a team like that. It's not exactly what Oklahoma City was with Harden and the decision they made, but you know, there's certainly a team on the rise, and you'd hate to see, especially Bobby nowadays, where I don't know, it just doesn't seem like the small market financial problems exist as much as they used to with the TV revenue coming in and the revenue sharing and all the money that is kind of split up. It just seems like the problems that Oklahoma City ran into financially, not wanting to go into the tax with James Harden, that those don't exist as much anymore, do they?
No, they shouldn't, especially with the influx of TV money that's coming in. And you look at this Jazz team, they're 30th in the NBA in payroll. So eventually it balances out. So what you basically have saved this year might cost you next year or the year after. So I think if you do the right, you know, if you balance your books the right way, certainly from a cap perspective, and you have the flexibility to do so, I think, you know, if you look at the roster, does Derek Favors kind of be the odd man out maybe? With that contract, he'll be going into his last year, and he's been, you know, dinged up a little bit. Can you, you know, slide Trey Lyles in there at the four? That might be something where maybe if you're looking from a cost perspective, that might be able to alleviate a little bit there.
All right. So the 2017 version of the 2016 Jazz to me is Minnesota and what's happening with the Wolves right now. I mean, you know, this is kind of what we had anticipated, Bobby. Maybe we thought it was going to happen a little bit sooner, but I think we all kind of anticipated some kind of surge from this team. They're too talented and they're too well coached to play the way they did for most of the first half of the season. But man, not only are they racking up wins, but they're knocking three of their last four wins: Washington, Golden State, and the Clippers. Before that, they beat Utah, they beat Denver, they beat Chicago, and they beat Toronto. I mean, they're not just winning games, Bobby. They're beating the best of the best right now in their conference and beyond.
You know, it's funny, Chris. I always say that, and I think we maybe got a little bit fooled with Minnesota last year because they won some games in April with that young group. And, you know, they were, you know, at that point, they were, you know, so far out of the playoffs and they won 20 plus games. And that, let's see what happens when this team plays some meaningful games. And do I think they'll get into the playoffs? I don't think so. Just because they're, you know, I think they're three back in a loss column, but these are meaningful games right now. You look at last night in, you know, that Washington game against a hot Wizard team who had, you know, basically run the table at West, and to be able to win that game, you've played really good basketball here. And let's see if this can springboard the last 5 weeks of the season into next year, where Rubio has played really well. I mean, he was unbelievable last night, Chris. I mean, he had 23 and 19. Carl Anthony Towns has been dominant. You've gotten some help off your bench here, and that group there is there to stay. I mean, if you can get Zach LaVine back from his injury, and you've got cap space, so is that an appealing team for some of these free agents this summer? Because there's not going to be that much money out there, Chris, from a cap perspective. I think this is your window, if you're Minnesota management, to kind of to jump all over that, because eventually you've got the Wiggins and LaVine extension coming up. So here's the time to kind of bolster this roster. But from where they were back in, I think, late November or early December, when you kind of questioned their work ethic and, you know, maybe how hard they competed, to where, you know, they are in mid-March, I mean, has been, you know, they had to go through some growing pains here, but it's been a huge step.
I can't believe they almost traded Ricky Rubio. Like, I
for
can't
Derek
believe,
Rose.
I can't believe they were even, I mean, however that deal was scuttled, you know, Minnesota, Tibbs, Scott Layden, they should be thanking their stars, because that would have been so stupid. I mean, Rubio is a flawed player. He still can't shoot, which is beyond me why players with his kind of skill set haven't figured that out and developed that skill set at some point along the way. But, I mean, he is so much better for that team than Derrick Rose would be. I mean, Derrick Rose is a better individual scorer, but Ricky Rubio is, you know, does what he's been doing for the last few weeks, which is get guys involved. You know, be a playmaker. They've got enough guys that can score, Bobby. They need a passer, and that's what Ricky Rubio is.
Chris, you don't give up a 26-year-old point guard who's got you know, two more years left on his contract, that good money, because you're going to see what this summer, what's going to happen to Derrick Rose, and he's going to have a hard time finding a home. I mean, he can go to a team that it's a rebuild and you know, maybe make some money there, but to go to a playoff team, I think he's really going to have a hard time. And if you know, and that would have been a home run for New York, because they're going to be looking for a point guard this summer. But how Rubio has played, you know, certainly since the All-Star break, has, you know, I mean, he's still shooting at 40%, but, you know, it's funny, that's his career high. I mean, this year, you know, before that it was, you know, 38-1, and he's almost right at it, you know, double-double average, and, you know, almost had 10 points and 9 assists per night.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned Rose, because that was where I was going to go next with your New York Knicks and where they are right now. I mean,
Knicks was in the 80s.
Yeah. I thought it was, I mean, first of all, they're bottoming out right now. They're terrible. They lost the Nets, 15 games now under 500. Again, another non-winning season for this team, guaranteed. And you got Kristaps Porzingis, the future of the franchise, that is, you know, not only expressing confusion, but it's almost like he's in this delirious state where he's quoting like FDR out there saying, like, you know, choppy seas make good sailors, or whatever it is that FDR quote looks like. First of all, excellent of a Latvian player to be able to quote FDR. I mean, that caught me off guard. But, you know, this team continues to baffle, Bobby. They're once again recommitted to the triangle, and with the way they're finishing this season, would it surprise you at all if Phil Jackson decides to make Jeb Hornacek the fall guy again, or make a coach the fall guy again here?
It wouldn't, but, you know, there goes back to my philosophy then. If the coach goes, then you should go, which probably won't happen when you're making, you know, $12 million a year. And
yeah, but think about how much money they're having to pay the coach and Derek Fisher. I mean, we're starting to add up here, Bobby, with the money they're paying out.
No, you're right. And eventually, I know, you know, James Dolan gave that interview, but when do you raise your hand here? You know, it's almost like you're letting the inmates run the asylum here. It's like you're, you know, I always say, like, you know, you give your keys, you know, you give your, let your kids stay home for the weekend. You come home and there's no windows and the roof has been like blown off the, you know, there, you know, they've had a party and you've ruined the place. And where this Knick team is now compared to where it was 3 years ago, it's in terrible shape. The only saving benefit is that they have their lottery pick, and hopefully you can get a draft pick. Because if you don't, then you're going to have to figure out what your point guard position is. But I think when you look back at that loss on Sunday night to New York, it wasn't like they played all their young kids. You know, I mean, you played Anthony 36 minutes, Lee 38 minutes, Porzingis 33, Rose 37. So it wasn't like you intentionally tried to tank there. You basically just got beat by a Nets team who had been on a road for three weeks there. So I don't know where this Knick team is going. I mean, the parts are back except for Rose. You've got to figure out, you know, if he's part of your future, which I would think he isn't, or he shouldn't be. But then who do you go out and get in free agency from a point guard perspective? Because the majority of those guys are going to retain and stay home.
Yeah, and here's one of the quotes from Porzingis after the Nets loss. Says there's a lot of confusion. A lot of times it's basically one-on-one. Whoever, me, myself, Carmelo, Courtney Lee, we try to make something happen, and that's not how it's supposed to be. That, I mean, you know, look, you're right. Like, they keep losing. They get their draft pick. They get a high lottery pick. Maybe they get lucky. Maybe they get one of the top two picks, and maybe they're able to draft a Fultz or a Lonzo Ball, or even a little bit further down, Dennis Smith from NC State, who looks like he can be a pretty good player too. What terrifies me, Bobby, is that they take one of these dynamic point guards and shove him into the triangle. Because, can you imagine Lonzo Ball in the triangle? Like, what a waste of talent to have him being a triangle point guard. You want to make him an up-tempo point guard. You want to make him, you know, he's kind of a Jason Kidd type of player. I mean, that's a lofty comparison, but he has that sort of, you know, that sort of skill set. You know, my biggest fear with the Knicks is that they don't learn from their mistakes, and they continue the triangle into next season, and they put one of these great young point guards into a system that restricts them from being the players they could be.
Well, and that's when we get to the draft workouts, and based on where this Nick pick, let's say hypothetically they get the number two pick in the draft. And I think that's where your agent comes into play, where you've got to have some dialogue with the front office as far as what your system is going to be. And I would certainly have some concern there if that's where it's going to be. And I think if you bring that player in for the workout, you know, do you try to put some triangle principles in while you're, you know, going through that workout? Likely it'll be one on O. So I don't think you'll get much out of it, but it is New York. And I'm sure with these kids, it's not like you're going to a city where you don't want to go to. It's, you still have the big lights, and you have them from a marketing perspective. It's still there. But Chris, I think you look back on Porzingis, I mean, he's going to be going into year three, and there's never a guarantee that these players will stay here. You know, I know that you're protected by restricted free agency, but I you know, if this thing spirals out of control, for, you know, into next year, you know, if I'm Andy Miller and I'm Kristaps Porzingis, who's Kristaps Porzingis' agent, I would say, I don't know if I want to be there. And I would put over his head, you know, hey, maybe I'll just sign the qualifying offer. And, you know, we go from there. And that's where my concern was. And we've talked about how Jokic has developed out in Denver, and they put the right pieces around him. And I'm not convinced that New York is able to do that.
Yeah, I wouldn't be at all surprised if those conversations had not already taken place amongst Kristaps Porzingis and his people. I mean, I think Porzingis has the mindset to be a great player in New York City, and I think there's a big part of him that wants to be there, but you know, 2 years in, he's looking at a total train wreck. And how do you see the light at the end of the tunnel? Like, they keep changing up the offense. They keep changing up the personnel around him. They keep trying to put, like, these Band-Aids on bullet holes here. You know, if they go out this summer and do, you know, a lot of the same stuff, just try to sign veterans that'll get them into the playoffs, you know, what hope can there be? I mean, I guess the only hope in the Knicks' best chance of appeasing Porzingis long-term is to get that young point guard. All of a sudden, you've got a 21-year-old point guard, a 21-year-old power forward slash center in Porzingis. And at least then you have the framework. But I don't know who's going to be coaching this team in a year, Bobby. And if Phil Jackson, honestly, this gets said a lot, but if Phil Jackson is going to continue to push the triangle, he's got to coach it. He's got to come down and coach it, because you can't make Jeff Hornacek, who has never run the triangle in his life and has no interest in being a triangle coach, you can't have him teaching a system that he doesn't want to and doesn't know how to teach.
You know, instead of teaching a triangle, Chris, he should be out scouting players. I mean, in all honesty, go out and with your personnel people and go watch, you know, some of these college kids that you might be picking with the seventh pick in the draft. And instead of, you know, with this group here, because who knows, you know, you're trying to do it. And is Derrick Rose going to be part of your future? I mean, he's a free agent. Is Ron Baker, who's a restricted free agent, part of your future here? You tried to trade Carmelo Anthony and you couldn't, you know, and now you know, where is this team? You know, what's the direction here? And you're right. I mean, they'll have cap space like they've had the last, you know, couple years here. But I mean, you know, as cap space is fool's gold. I mean, you can only do so much with it. And as far as finding the right players to do so.
Yeah, there's going to come a day that the Knicks are good. I just hope that I'm, you know, alive to actually see it at that point, because I mean, it's been such a remarkably bad 15 kind of plus year run, really since the turn of the century. And that coincides with James Dolan taking over as the owner. And you know, look at when you look at across sports at the teams that are in bad situations, the Washington Redskins right now in football, bad ownership. You know, Sacramento, who we've been talking about ad nauseum over the years. This is great that we don't have to talk about Sacramento anymore. They're not a talking point right now with Cousins out of the mix. But you know, bad ownership situation. And the Knicks, bad ownership. I mean, you've had, when you were in Brooklyn, that was a quirky kind of ownership group, but I don't know if I would have described them as a bad ownership group. But I mean, this just, I think, speaks to the importance of having steady, stable ownership leading the way. I mean, you know, Peter Holt is regarded as the best owner kind of in the NBA, and there probably aren't 10 people listening to this podcast right now that could pick Peter Holt out of a lineup. They see him every June or every other June or whatever it is when he collects the championship trophy. And owners that act like that are the ones that have success. Owners that act like Dolan and Dan Snyder in Washington and Vivek Ranadive in Sacramento, they just don't.
Mickey Arison. I mean, if you're going to follow a blueprint of how to do it, that's the guy to follow. You know, kind of lets his team do what they want. You know, he signs a check, but he's got a front office in place with Pat Riley and Andy Ellsberg and Adam Simon and that group. I mean, we don't even have to talk about the coaching staff there because that's like the magician there. What he's been able to do with that group.
Yeah.
But you know, that's where if you're going to, follow a kind of a blueprint, that's the direction that you want to follow. And I always say, Chris, hey, I get it. You know, you don't get a handbook when you take over one of these jobs and you basically kind of, you know, it's trial by error and you kind of learn on the fly here and stuff like that. But now we're in, 3 years, past, and it's still the same issues.
Yeah. Yeah. It's unreal how that keeps going, but we'll see. We'll see what happens in the next couple of weeks and months as the Knicks season ends in the lottery, which is going to be a big day for them moving forward. Bobby, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for taking some time to join me here on the podcast.
Thanks, Chris.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Bobby Marks for joining the show. A reminder, you can listen to Archive Podcast at iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. If you have some time, post a comment, leave us a rating. I really appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.